We'll call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 1:36 in the afternoon. Please silence all your cell phones. I'm joined today by Co-Chair Hoffman, Senator Wilson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick. Senator Bishop is excused for today because of personal reasons, and Senator or Co-Chair Stedman will be by here momentarily. I'd like to acknowledge that we have Senator Diesel in the room. And so we have two bills on the agenda today, Senate Bill 56 by Senator Dunbar and House Bill 26 by Representative Story. I'd like to call up the Senator Dunbar and his staff up to the table. We're going to hear Senate Bill 56, the Alaskan Performance Scholarship Program. This is his first hearing. And Senator Dunbar, would you please go ahead and introduce the bill and tell us what it's all about?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Olson. I very much appreciate the Senate Finance Committee hearing this bill. SB 56 would make improvements to the Alaska Performance Scholarship. So all of last session and this session too, we've heard about the difficulty recruiting and retaining folks, young folks, to Alaska. We hear about the ever-persistent brain drain that is making us a less competitive place for young people. I believe the APS is one tool we can use to try to keep some of our young people in state. The Alaska Performance Scholarship is a merit-based scholarship for high-performing Alaskan students to use at a post-secondary Alaskan institution. Oh, I should say my name for the record. Thank you. Forrest Dunbar, Senator from District J. To receive the scholarship, students must acquire a minimum 2.5 GPA, receive a minimum qualifying score in an approved college or career entrance exam, and take specific courses to receive the scholarship. Award amounts vary based on the student's GPA and college career entrance score. Unfortunately, results have shown that the APS has experienced a sharp decline in usage over the last several years. But it is still a strong program that incentivizes our most industrious students to stay in Alaska to study. Some proof of the program's efficacy and potential lie in the statistics. According to the latest APS outcome report, a survey has shown that in 2023, 78% of eligible students indicated their likelihood of taking placement exams was increased due to the APS. 71% of eligible students mentioned that the program made them more inclined to achieve better grades in high school. Of APS recipients beginning their enrollment in fall 2022, 78% persisted into their second year compared to just 53% of non-APS students. Of the first-time full-time APS recipients who began their enrollment in 2023, 51% completed a graduate degree compared to 29% of non-recipients. APS recipients consistently demonstrate increased rates of Alaska residency and involvement in Alaska's workforce. Of APS eligible students surveyed in 2023, 73% have indicated that APS played a role in their decision to attend an in-state school. Now I'll say, so we're going to have a sectional from James Holzenberg, my staffer, but I should say that there are three primary challenges, sort of categories of challenges that this bill seeks to address. First, we have a notification issue, which James will go into more detail. But basically, students are being notified that they won the scholarship too late in their decision-making process between whether or not they're going to go in-state or out-of-state. Second, the scholarship hasn't kept up with inflation, and so it's become a less powerful tool as the years have progressed. And then third, there are a variety of barriers to eligibility, which we hope to address in the bill. And I'll say also, you know, some very good work was done by the members of the other body. The House Education Committee made a number of changes to the original bill, which we then adopted in our version. And so with that, with the permission of the chair, I will turn it over to my staffer to run through a sectional, and then we have some great invited testimony as well.
I'd like to note that Representative Ruffridge has joined us, and he is the sponsor of the companion bill on the House side. Mr. Holzenberg, identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your section.
Thank you, Co-Chair Olson. For the record, my name is James Holzenberg, staff to Senator Forrest Dunbar. As the Senator said, SB 56 proposes solutions to these identified problems with the current iteration of the APS. So in order to address problem number one, notification issues, the legislation adds a handful of new dates of notification. Notification will now begin in the 9th and 10th grades, no later than January 15th. Notifications for the 11th grades will occur no later than December 31st, and it will also inform them of remaining academic requirements the student must meet to be awarded the APS scholarship at each of the three levels.
Thank you.
And then finally, notification that an applicant is qualified to be awarded the APS will occur no later than August 15th. The second problem that the senator mentioned was award levels not keeping up with increases in tuition and fees. Just really briefly, the breakdown of the increase for each of the three levels is $7,000, up from $4,755 for the first award level. The second award level will be now be $5,250, up from the previous award level of $3,677, and the third level is $3,500, up from $2,378. The third bucket, which is basically two issues, which is that of standardized testing barriers and eligibility challenges for applicants. SB 56 will cast a wider net of eligibility with these following provisions. The first will allow for up to 1 year of career technical education courses to count towards eligibility. Second, the eligibility for the APS is then extended from 6 years to 8 years after high school graduation to account for the many non-traditional students that Alaska has. The third, students may qualify for the APS 18 months prior to graduating from high school instead of 12 months. Fourth, a provision allowing for both the SAT or ACT scores or grade point average can be used in consideration for eligibility. It makes things a little more flexible. In addition to that, award recipients may also qualify for a higher level award if they meet the requirements while enrolled in post-secondary education. So if you qualify for it in high school and you enter college and you get your grades up and you continue working hard, you can get a step up into the next higher tier of award qualification. Next, there is a new subsection that directs the Department of Education and Early Development to establish regulations creating an equivalent rating for schools that do not award GPAs. There is also a new section that will extend a student's eligibility to use the APS award by one semester for each semester an award recipient is enrolled in part-time and is still in good standing. Right now, if a student were to be in part-time status for a semester, they would only be eligible for half of their award that semester, and then they would just forego the remaining funds. Once again, this just allows for greater flexibility and allows for students to use their full award. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee for either the bill sponsor or the staffer? Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Co-Chair Olson. I'm just looking, how are the 9th and 10th graders notified?
You know, I could speculate, but I think the best thing to do would be to call on our invited testifiers who can speak directly to that. So let's see.
We'll wait till they call them up and then
okay.
Ask them the question. Any other questions?
I can wait till they miss.
Good.
I have one detail, Mr. Chair. In the inflation, may I, Mr. Chair? I'm sorry. The award amount has not increased since 2011. I think that is worth stressing here. So you can see what appears to be a rather large jump in the scholarship amount, but again, this hasn't happened since 2011.
Okay. Any other questions by members of the committee for either the bill sponsors, staffer? I have a couple of questions. Are these scholarships available for graduate school as well? If somebody is going on to some type of higher education after getting a baccalaureate degree?
To my knowledge, the answer is yes, but I would also like to possibly punt that question to Senate effort with ACPE just to be absolutely sure. But,
and yes. One of the things that was a big factor when I was going to college was that the ability to forgive the loans that were being taken out there. Is there a consideration of doing that in this bill to try and attract more of the out-of-state people that are, if they come on back, that they can get some forgiveness of their student loans?
I don't believe that there is a provision in this bill for that. I mean, I think there are other efforts to have loan forgiveness, but unless I'm mistaken. I don't think this directly applies to loan forgiveness.
I see. And are these scholarships only for the Alaska schools? There's nothing that allows somebody to go to an out-of-state school?
This scholarship is intended for in-state schools, yes.
Any further questions by members of the committee for the bill sponsor or his staffer? Not thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have invited testimony. Santa Eford is the executive director of Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. Would you come on up, please? And you're welcome to go and stay at the table, Senator Dunbar, if you want to. Just make sure she has a good microphone and go ahead and identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes. Good afternoon. Am I clear? Thank you. So, good afternoon, Co-Chair Olson, Hoffman, and other distinguished members of the committee. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today and testify for in support of Senate Bill 56. For the record, my name is Santa Eford. I'm Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. The Alaska Legislature enacted the Alaska Performance Scholarship in 2011 to retain our best and brightest students in Alaska. From 2011 to 2024, the Alaska Performance Scholarship has delivered on its purpose for those students who actually utilize it for post-secondary programs in-state. And those four purposes were to offer incentive for Alaska students to excel in high school, to prepare Alaska students for college and career training, to help Alaska students persist and complete their post-secondary programs, and to retain skilled Alaskans in Alaska to support our workforce needs. However, since 2018, there has been a decrease in students' eligibility and usage of the APS, with the class of 2023 and 2024 being the lowest percentage of students eligible out of the graduating number of approximately 8,000 high school graduates. Only 17% in 2023 and 2024 were even eligible for the scholarship. And also the lowest number of students, number-wise, using the award to stay in state. Through surveys, a full 10-year review of the program, and anecdotal information from our school counselors, students, and families, there are a number of reasons that are given and supported why Alaskans are not pursuing or using this scholarship. And some of those current barriers include, as you've heard, which these things are addressed in this bill, standardized test requirement, generally a lack of accessibility to those standardized tests, especially for our rural and remote students who may not be able to get into a testing center. Late award notification. High school seniors currently may not even know they have achieved this award until they've already graduated and made decisions about their post-secondary. Program awareness in general, just not knowing or understanding by the ninth grade that this program exists and that there is a set curriculum that needs to be followed and it needs to start in the ninth grade. The eroding value of the award itself, as Senator Dunbar shared, the award amounts are in statute. They have not been changed since the original 2011 numbers. And I can provide you with information. The Commission on Post-Secondary Education has looked at tuitions across the state of Alaska since inception of the APS in 2011 to current tuitions and average increases in cost of attendance for Alaska post-secondary programs is 63% increase during those years. With the University of Alaska, I think an average of around 43% during those years. Therefore, the increase in the award amounts are about that 45-47% to try to address that increase in cost of attendance. Also, the use and the flexibility of the award. This bill expands career and technical education options and tracks to use the program for, which, as we know, has become increasing importance to our students and Alaskans. And also, during the years, especially from 2018 on, there's been some instability in funding of the Performance Scholarship. There have been various cuts to the university, the Higher Education Fund, which funds these scholarships, has been in doubt and in question. It was swept one year and then recapitalized. So there's just some concern whether the actual funds and the scholarship would be there. And so, as you've heard, SB 56 seeks to remove these barriers for eligibility and for use of Alaskans. It is a tool already there in our statute, just waiting to be sharpened to help support the needs of keeping our students and therefore really helping to increase for the future our workforce to meet the needs of Alaska. And I am happy to answer any questions.
Do you have any questions by members of the committee for Ms. Eford? Senator Wilson.
Thank you. I guess my first question was, how do you plan to notify the 9th and 10th graders? Or how is notification done currently for the 11th and 12th?
Ms. Eford.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson. In the bill, it outlines that the school districts would be responsible for notifying those students, along with, as right now, the Commission on Post-Secondary Education works in partnership with our school districts, and in particular our school counselors, to ensure that they have the information about the Alaska Performance Scholarship. But I'm sure that in other committees and testimonies that you've heard, counselors are not located in every school. Counselors have been reduced in schools and cannot be retained. And so there has been not always maybe as much information put on that early notification, which the commission also tries to support in middle school, providing information to those schools so that students get that, families know it, so they can start out in the 9th grade on the right path. But that is set in this bill that would be through school districts.
Follow-up, Senator Wilson?
Yeah, thank you. I just didn't know if it was just a newsletter that goes home to all the parents, or each student gets notified, or it's up to the school district. Does it seem that there will be consistency of notification across all school districts and all schools equally? And so I understand that we want to give local control and let that be determination, but it seems on an issue that you were trying to increase, we would want to make sure that there's consistency in how these students could be notified of this opportunity. That's all. Thank you.
Ms. Seifert, you want to comment on that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, absolutely, we agree. And that's why it truly is in partnerships with all of our education stakeholders to make sure that our students and families understand this is available for them.
Senator Merrick has a question.
Thank you, Chair Olson. One of the barriers listed is lack of accessibility to tests, unable to physically access testing locations, particularly from rural Alaska. Can you not take the ACT and SAT online? You have to be physically in a specific location?
Through the chair, Senator Merrick, that is correct. There has been the SAT and the ACT have been working on coming up with an online version, but at this point it is not available, and you do have to go physically sit at a testing center with a proctor and all those things, all the different pieces being monitored.
Thank you.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you. Senator, is there a cap to how many students are awarded the scholarship program? Is it for each category that they're awarded? So you have so many that are 3.5, so many in the 3, or so the 2.5, or how does the awards work in terms of competition and if there is a cap?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, there currently is not a cap on how many students could be eligible and receive the award. Up until this point, we have not had the wonderful problem that that it would be if we had more students actually qualifying and eligible and actually using the award. There is in statute, or possibly it's regulation, so I may have to correct that, but there is a way to prorate if there was some problem with the appropriated amount for the awards, but currently there's not a cap on number.
Senator Wilson.
This is a follow-up to that. You know, I guess the last part of the bill, Section 8, about having a grade point average of a 4-point scale or a 5-point scale for advanced placement classes. Not every school district or every school has the opportunity to offer honor classes or advanced placement. So are you disenfranchising those folks who may not have an opportunity to get a higher income? Or, you know, if I get a B in an honors class, it's 3.5 average versus an A, which is a 4, or a B, which is a 3. So having a weighted scale, is that equitable for these students that may not have that opportunity to get a higher income because their grade point average might be a 3.0? But if I had the same 3.0 in an honors class, I would get a 3.5. Sort of a weighted GPA versus an unweighted GPA. Just wondering if that would be something to possibly change for those schools that don't have an opportunity to have advanced placement classes or honor classes.
Ms. Seifert.
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Wilson, that the actual establishment of the classes that count and the GPA and the scoring comes under the Department of Education and Early Development with the school in conjunction with the school districts. And I do believe there is currently in place a way to look at equivalence across our school districts to ensure that there is equity about between the classes and how those GPAs are calculated. There is within this bill a direction, and I'm sorry I don't have the exact section in front of me, but direction to the Department of Education and Early Development to look at equivalence for specifically schools that may not follow a traditional 4.0 or 5.0 grades scale, homeschoolers that may not be following that, other opportunities, so that will be equitably determined.
Okay. Senator Wilson, follow up?
No, it looks like that's in Section 7. I just didn't know how this is really applied. I guess I'm just... And maybe someone from the Department of Education can provide to the committee or to my office just how this is applied on a case-by-case basis. And it just is a little unclear in the statute to me.
Through the chair, may I have one other comment?
For sure.
The other piece, Senator Wilson, which I feel will really help to with the equity also, is the step-up provision that is also provided in this bill. So for instance, if a student maybe was not as diligent in high school and maybe they squeaked under and got the third level award, they have an opportunity for continuing eligibility in if they, after 2 full semesters in their post-secondary program, if their GPA is now better, they have the opportunity to step up to the next level of the award. And I think that helps with some of the equity pieces too for those students.
Yeah. Thank you.
On that point, if a student starts getting into scholastic trouble, is there a penalty for that, or is there a decrease in the amount of eligibility for he's going to be getting?
Chair Olson, there is a continuing eligibility requirement because, of course, as we've shared, this is an academic performance-based scholarship that was put to help reward those students. So they may lose their award for a semester, but they can earn it back.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Eford, for members of the committee? If not, I've got a couple of questions. One is has to do with private schools. If a student is coming out of a private school, or is homeschooled for that matter, are they eligible for these scholarships as well? And how do you justify that if their mother's giving them an A and they're really doing B work? Or vice versa, or whatever.
Chair Olson, again, the grading, the grade point equivalent, and the classes that count toward the APS, mm-hmm. and I will point you, and I can also provide to the committee the current curriculum that needs to be followed for this. Mm-hmm. That part of the program is under the Department of Education and Early Development.
Okay. So this scholarship makes it is both for homeschool as well as kids coming out of private schools?
Through the chair, yes, and I think I have a lifeline on Carrie Thomas, my director of program operations. I'm 99% sure I'm answering correctly. I know that it's for homeschoolers. I will defer to her about private schools.
Ms. Thomas, are you on, ma'am?
Yes, I am.
Do you want me to restate the question, or did you hear the question?
Please restate it.
The question I had was that if for some reason somebody's coming out of a private school or is going to a private school, are they still eligible for this scholarship?
Okay, thank you. For the record, this is Carrie Thomas, Director of Program Operations for the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. And the answer is yes, private school students are eligible. They have a separate process for both private and homeschool students where they submit their application to the Department of Education and Early Development, who determines their eligibility. So, yes, they are eligible for this program.
Thank you for that answer. I want to note that Senator Stedman has been with us for a while, who's busy on other legislative work. The other question that I have that we talked about is the thing that drew me back to the state was the loan program that they had 50 years ago or whatever it was, and when I went to college. And that was what drew a lot of people back here. Is there ever consideration of doing something like that again if you want to bring people back?
Chair Olson, currently that program no longer exists in Alaska because the funding went away to support the repayment of those loans to bring students back. There is currently in statute the one program, the Teacher Education Loan Program. But again, there really has not been an appropriation. We had a couple of years ago, through Senator Hoffman, we had a small appropriation to take care of some of the teachers that had been outside of a rural definition at that point in time. But since then, we really have not had an appropriation to fund that program.
Okay. Any further questions by Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Eford, thanks for being here. Can you tell us, what is the average award today?
Through the chair, I have that somewhere. I think I'll defer to Carrie Thomas, my program operations. I believe she has in front of her, we have how many are level 1, level 2, and level 3 currently.
Ms. Thomas, are you on, ma'am? Are you still on?
Yes, I'm on. If you could just give me 1 minute, I'll identify the answer to that question. Okay. Maybe we can move on to another question and circle back, please.
Okay.
I do have other questions.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Eford, I was looking through some of the projections and educated guessing from when the APS was first put into law back in, I think, 2012. And the estimates were, I think, that roughly half of all Alaska kids would be eligible by this time, and that a little more than half of them would take advantage. Reality has fallen a little short of those expectations. Is it your sense that this bill is going to bring us up to those estimates, or what's the target in terms of improvement from this piece of legislation?
Ms. Seifert.
Through the chair, Senator Keel. This is an opinion, of course, because it truly is an estimate. But looking at the program, it was increasing when it was put into statute in 2011. And let me see if I can find the sheet that has those numbers. So the scholarship, the recipients actually in the year of the highest number was at 3,423 students. That was in 2017, and then a little decrease, but then really precipitously started falling off in 2019 through our current. And we have heard from, I did forget to mention, I will go back and say that the Commission on Post-Secondary contracted with McKinley Research for a full 10-year program look back at this. We know the legislature always wants to ensure that funding that they're putting in place is actually providing for the outcomes that they that the program was intended for. And as I shared, the students that are using this program are getting those outcomes. However, in this 10-year program look back, these are the recommendations that were provided through this data research survey of all students that used it and were not eligible for the program. Families, school teachers, and counselors, and others, financial aid officers. And so we absolutely think the changes in this bill will increase the use of this award because that's what we're hearing. That's why we're responding in this way. And that's why I appreciate Senator Dunbar taking this and looking at it as this workforce tool that can help us keep our students. I really don't think I can predict exactly how many, but as we think about or look at fiscal notes, I can give you our thought process of what we went through to put some numbers down.
Alderman Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll appreciate that. Back in 2012, when the bill passed, it was all guesswork, and much of it educated and a little magical thinking. So now we have some data, and it'd be great to get some strong estimates of what this looks like going forward. I think the one thing we can look at as a tremendous success of the APS is the number of Alaska kids who stay in Alaska. I think it's grown. And so there's great value in that, but we just have to figure out the numbers now.
Senator Wilson, you had a question? Okay. Ms. Carey, are you on? Did you find the answer to the average award that was asked a few minutes ago?
Oh, yes, Chair, I have the answer. The average award amount is $3,500. And just to inform that number, about half of the APS eligible students are level one, and then approximately 25% level two, 25% level three.
Okay. Thank you very much for finding those numbers. Any further questions of Ms. Seifert by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for coming up this morning,
Thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Next, we have Dr. Paul Layer, Vice President of Academics, Students, and Research at the University of Alaska. Are you on, sir?
Hi, thank you. I want to make sure you can hear me okay.
You're coming in loud and clear.
Thank you. For the record, Dr. Paul Layer, Vice President of Academics, Students, and Research at the University of Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 56 for the Alaska Performance Scholarship. I believe Senator Dunbar and Director Eifert covered a lot of the areas that I wanted to talk about. The bottom line for us is that the Alaska Performance Scholarship works. It works for the student, it works for the university, it works for the state. We are, as the largest higher education provider in the state of Alaska, are a major beneficiary of the Alaska Performance Scholarship. A vast majority of students who are recipients choose the University of Alaska at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, the University of Alaska Anchorage, or the University of Alaska Southeast. As you heard, students who are APS recipients are more likely to be retained from their first year to their second year at 78% versus 53% for non-APS recipients. Graduates who are APS recipients are likely to stay in the state. Greater than 80% of APS recipients stay in Alaska upon receiving their degree. If those students went outside to lower 48 institutions, less than 25% would come back to Alaska. So for us, for our state, it is critical that we have students stay in the state, take advantage of the higher education opportunities that are here, and benefit from those, and then continue to contribute to the workforce. As was mentioned, the bill addresses three major areas that are important for us. The first is the notification issue. We are in a very competitive environment in higher education for preparing aid packages for students, scholarships, and other notifications. And because the APS has been very late in being awarded, we cannot put that as part of our recruitment package for students. We bundle the APS with other scholarships that we have, the UA Scholars Program, as well as federal grant programs that are available to put together a competitive offer to keep our students in Alaska and reduce the cost to them as they pursue higher education. Moving the notification dates up allows us to put those packages together as students are making those decisions for where to go to college. The second is the eligibility question. As you've heard, the number of eligible students has dropped, mainly because of the testing requirement, as Director Eifert had mentioned. And so for us, relaxing that requirement is critical for us to be able to have more students eligible and to be eligible to come to the university. All three of our universities have dropped standardized testing as an admission requirement. We are an open enrollment university. Students may use some of those test results for placement, but we do not look at them as part of admissions. Many universities around the United States have also dropped the standardized test for admissions into their institutions. So for us, we don't, you know, if the student does use the standardized test for APS eligibility or comes to university, we can use that for placement. And again, we would welcome to have those students here. The award levels, as you've heard, are being increased. The award level, the proposed, the highest level is close to what we would have for our tuition for incoming students. And for that, again, it allows us to put together a very competitive offer for students considering coming to one of our universities. So with those changes, I think that it allows us to work with ACPE in marketing this opportunity for students and for parents, and really does set us up to be successful. As also is noted, once the student receives the award and enrolls in higher education, eligibility is based solely on their performance at our universities. That's the way it should be. Once we have them, we can work with those students to make sure that they maintain their grade point, that they maintain their eligibility, that they get these awards, that they stay in school, they graduate and stay in Alaska. And that's really the goals of this program. And again, it's been very successful over the years for us, for the state, and for the students. So with that, Mr. Chair, I conclude my testimony and we'll be happy to answer questions.
We have questions by members of the committee for Dr. Lehr. Dr. Lehr, I have a question. As you talked about the 80% of the students that remain in Alaska that have gotten the scholarships, you have a breakdown on whether they came from rural areas or from the urban areas, or even in-state versus out-of-state?
Through the chair, my data was from the APS report produced by ACPE, so I would have to go back and take a look at that. They have been very good about tracking those students, but I will have to get you, I'll work with Director Eifert and get you the response to that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions for Dr. Lehrer by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Dr. Lehrer.
Well, thank you very much.
We'll now open it up for public testimony. Anybody in the room that wants to go ahead and testify? Anybody online wants to go ahead and testify? With seeing nobody stepping up to the plate, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. We plan on setting this bill aside, and thank you very much for coming out this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for coming up. The next bill up is House Bill 26, Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council by Representative Andy Story. This is the first hearing. Ms. Story, please come on up with your staffer, introduce yourself for the record, and bring us up to speed on this very important bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of House Finance Committee. It's great to be here today. For the record, Representative Andy Story, District 3, and my staff with me today.
For the record, Miranda Kaguay-Whirl, staff to Rep Story.
Just before you keep going, we're the Senate Finance Committee.
Oh, I am so sorry. How could I forget? I wanted to just say a brief history about the council and its purpose and then go into the bill. The Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council was created by the 27th legislature. The governor appointed 5 voting members who are professional language experts and who represent diverse regions of the state. Additionally, there are 2 non-voting members, 1 member of the Senate, appointed by the Senate President, 1 member of the House, appointed by the Speaker. I have been fortunate to serve as the non-voting member from the House in the past legislature. The Council provides recommendations and advice to both the governor and the legislature on programs, policies, and projects, and networks and advocates in support of the Council's mission. The mission is to advocate for the survival and revitalization of Alaska Native languages through collaboration and sharing for all. The bill before you came from the desires of the Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council to do 3 things which must be changed in statute: shorten the council's name, expand its membership, and update the official languages of Alaska to include native languages that were unintentionally left out. These few seemingly small changes proposed in this House Bill 26 have significant meaning to the council. The bill proposes a name change, simplifying it from the Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council to the Council of Alaska Native Languages. This reflects the goal of sustaining and reinvigorating Alaska Native languages, a concept that goes beyond preservation. It also provides a more fitting name for the diverse range of the work that the council does. Another request is to add 2 new members, from 5 to 7 voting members. Alaska has 23 distinct languages, and to be able to be inclusive of more languages, the council feels 2 more members would capture a greater perspective. Adding members allows for greater representation of the council and expands the involvement to reach other regions of the state. Finally, the bill revises the official list of languages to include those that were unintentionally omitted when Alaska Native languages were made co-official languages of Alaska in 2015. The current list of 20 Alaska Native languages included in statute is based on a 1974 map by Dr. Michael Krause. We now know from research that there are at least 23 distinct Alaska Native languages. Since the bill was here last year in Senate State Affairs, since it was heard in Senate State Affairs, the council has put forward a new recommendation in the latest 2024 report. Every other year, they do a report updating their recommendations to us. And in the report, one of the recommendations, since we last had a bill hearing on this, was for the council to move from the Community and Regional Affairs Division in the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development to the Department of Education and Early Development to better suit their goals of language education in classrooms. I have discussed this with both departments, and they are supportive of the changes. This is something that I would welcome amendment by this committee. I appreciate you hearing the bill today. The council does too, and we are happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee for Representative Story? If not, does your staffer want to go through the sectional analysis? Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
For the record, Miranda Worrell. So going through the sectional analysis, Section 1 of the bill amends Alaska Statute 24-12-310, subsection A, to include four new Alaska Native languages, which would change it from 20 to 23. Note that it does split the Tanana language, which is currently in statute, to the middle and lower Tanana. Section 2 of the bill would amend Statute 44-33-520, subsection A, to change the name to the Council for Alaska Native Languages. Section 3 of the bill amends Alaska Statute 44-33-520, subsection C, to amend to add two voting member seats to the Council. And Section 4 provides the governor's appointment of the additional two voting members under Section 3 as soon as practicable after the effective date.
Okay. Any questions of Ms. Worrell by members of the committee? Now, thank you very much for presenting that. Next, we'll go ahead and move over to invited testimony. We have Lance Mitchell, who's in the room. Would you please come on up and who's the chairman of the council? Go ahead and present us with your testimony.
And geez, to the co-chairs and to the honorable senators, my name is Hone Lance Twitchell. I am the chair of the Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council. I'm a professor of Alaska Native Languages at the University of Alaska Southeast, and I represent only myself. I speak in favor of all of these amendments. Alaska Native Languages are the oldest living resource in Alaska. These languages are older than the trees. They're as old as some of the rocks, and none of us are qualified to make the decision that they should not exist anymore. But I think Alaska Native Languages are currently not a priority of the state of Alaska. Browsing the state of Alaska website, I noticed that the state of Alaska employs approximately 15,000 people. To my knowledge, one of those is charged with assisting specifically with Alaska Native Languages. Now, I'm not very good at math, so bear with me. I think rounded up, that is 0.007% of the workforce in Alaska from the state of Alaska that has something to do specifically with Alaska Native Languages. So as we look at what it might take to shift, it's going to take some pretty seismic shifts in terms of ensuring that languages survive and thrive. There have been numerous studies that show living languages and healthy languages result in living people and healthy people. So some of the changes that we are looking at is a shift to the Department of Education and Early Development. So as we do a lot of work with folks over Indeed, as we developed our biennial report, which is titled Ayuruk, the 2024 Action Plan for Alaska Native Languages, I highly encourage every single legislator to read it cover to cover. It is really literally the least you can do for Alaska Native Languages is to look at what we have decided after talking with a number of people across the state of Alaska, educators, leaders, language advocates, elders, speakers, children, about what we should do. And some of the things that we noticed is this council has been making reports for over a decade now. And one of the things I think that is unfortunately common is most of the people in this building don't know what's in those pages. And it's a statement. It's a statement that we can change and we can shift. We can be compassionate and caring human beings who, even if we don't know much about Alaska Native languages, can stand in solidarity so they simply do not vanish. As we look at expanding the list of Alaska Native languages, it was an unfortunate oversight that languages were left out. And so we want to be inclusive. We don't want anyone to feel like they're not part of Alaska. And so every single Alaska Native language is sacred and irreplaceable. It contains concepts that cannot be translated. It contains things that cannot be replaced and that give a sense of fulfillment and wholeness and health to Alaska Natives and to non-Natives in Alaska. The Council highly encourages everyone to learn and to use Alaska Native languages because nobody had the right to come and attempt to extinguish them, but they absolutely did. We have testimony of elders who lived through boarding school experiences, who suffered through torture, who suffered through physical abuse, emotional abuse from teachers, from religious leaders, and from people who were part of government-sponsored and government-led and religious-led efforts to eliminate Alaska Native languages. So the council believes in its work. There are not enough of us on the council. We would like to add two more seats. I would highly encourage the governor in his appointments to look to the interior of Alaska, our Dene languages, those who were working daily in those languages, in those spaces where those languages exist, especially in the northern interior part of Alaska. We need some representation from there so that we are accurate in our work, in what we're trying to do. The other thing that I would say is looking at a name change. One is the name we have is just a little too long. And also, we're not really in the business of preservation. I can preserve fish. I do a really good job at that. My uncles taught me how to do that, my aunties. But what we're looking for with languages is living languages that have social power and daily use. So we think that streamlining the name makes a lot of sense. Preservation is a part of what we do, but reclamation is a bigger part of what we're looking at so that our languages are empowered to reclaim space, to reclaim time, to reclaim speakers, and to exist in a place where they're not continually threatened. It is a great honor to do this work, to be in this room, to be in this building, to be among you, and to share these ideas on what we do. We do not do enough. That is absolutely clear. But we can certainly do more, and we have a plan on how to get started, and I hope you all will support it. Nachish.
We have questions from members of the committee from Mr. Twitchell. Senator Wilson. I have a question. One of the things that is, well, first of all, let me just say that I was the sponsor of the bill just over a decade ago, and I've been on the council for the last 11 years. And I'm not trying to sound critical, but having listened to people that have come to me and asked me, you know, how do you justify spending the dollars that are requested to make the changes that are needed in order to have the council continue to do the good work that they are doing, when you have other programs that are trying to go ahead and stay funded, like Head Start, which is, the little kids are so in need of the Head Start program. Some have been closed because they've been underfunded. I guess, what do I say to those people?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. My suggestion is that we look at what can happen for a state of advocacy, and we can look at how can we get the governor's office and the legislature to listen to those suggestions that we have, which often doesn't happen. Usually we work with a very small number of wonderful legislators who see the opportunity to make a difference and to say, okay, languages do not have to die and languages will not die on my watch, because people will look in the history books, they'll say, oh, well, who was in charge at that time when this happened? And they'll see your names. And so one of the things that we can do is build a stronger partnership and a vision for what we're doing. So I would think if you look at what the budget is, if you look at just the budget of the state of Alaska, and again, you said, what percentage is going to this council? I think it's embarrassing. I think it's honestly embarrassing. If we really say we value languages, then sometimes you say, okay, well, a budget is a moral agreement, right? It's an ethical and moral agreement saying this is what we value. And adding an employee, so when the council was first formed, they said you'll have two employees to cover the entire state of Alaska, 23 languages, probably 20 of them are extremely endangered right now. And so with that situation, they said you'll have two employees, and in a matter of months, they said, okay, do it with one. And that second employee was never restored. That position was never restored. So this council has never gotten more than what we started. We've only gotten less. And I think if people want to say that Head Start programs will suffer and other programs will suffer, I don't think that's the case, because we're continually advocating for actual equity in education. Because in education right now, Alaska Native languages are not a part of the curriculum. They're usually an optional thing. So one of the recommendations that we are making is that Alaska Native languages, one semester of an Alaska Native language becomes a high school requirement. And then the future of Alaska Native languages is in the hands of Alaska people, the people of Alaska. All citizens of Alaska have a shared responsibility to at least learn a word, to at least learn some phrases, to learn some very basic conversational abilities. So we think that the work that we do pushes for looking at things in terms of fairness and equity and not taking away from other programs that are struggling as well.
Any further question from Mr. Twitchell by members of the committee? I've got one question. One other question is that as the council has been in place for over a decade now, what successes have they had that you can point to that says that, yes, this council is being effective and we should continue on with the funding?
Yes, and I want to thank you for your years of support as well, Senator. The things that the council has been able to do is to say the state of Alaska is listening to what's going on with Alaska Native languages. We've held listening sessions. Two of the elders who are on our council, in particular, Yayuk and Waki Charles, have led efforts to apologize to people for what happened and for opportunities that they may have missed to learn their own indigenous languages, and to have sessions where we talk about what it takes to heal intergenerationally, to reconnect with languages. And then we've been able to listen to folks who talk about what a language nest is. There are language nests that operate in the state of Alaska, and I think they do so kind of in the dark. And so we're trying to shine a light on some of these programs to say, look at this child speak this language. Look at the medicine that's in that. And for example, for our Thlinkit language, we went 60 years without creating a single new speaker, especially a birth speaker. And so now we have children who can speak our language. And that's a result of a unified effort to try and achieve something different than language death, which is, that's the only guarantee right now. But if we do make substantial, significant structural changes, which are going to feel uncomfortable, then I think we guarantee a future of life for Alaska Native languages.
Okay. Any further questions for Mr. Twitchell by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for coming up this afternoon.
Sheesh, thank you for your time.
Okay. I'm sorry, Senator Wilson. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just looking at this statute here, of I guess section 1, the section after that, 44.12.320, there's five different references in there saying that that first sentence is unconstitutional. Is there any thought or proposed to just delete that sentence in that statute that's following that section? And that, Mr. Chair, it basically just says the scope of this bill, the English language is the language that should be used by all public agencies and government functions and actions. And there's five different references saying that we lost a court case saying that that's unconstitutional. I just didn't know if it'd just be easier just to clean that up while we're addressing that piece of statute.
Representative Story.
Through the chair, thank you for that question, Senator Wilson. I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Yeah, just there's five different references in the statutes that just say the sentence that follows that, under the scope of this governing piece that talks about languages, that's unconstitutional, and that's that first sentence in 44.12.320.
Do you want a second to review it? Representative Story?
Have an at ease.
Yes, at ease. Thank you.
Call the Senate Finance Committee back to order. Go ahead, Representative Story.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. Thank you for the question, Senator Wilson. I would like to get back to you to make sure I have a thorough answer for you.
Is that okay with you, Senator Wilson? Okay. Next we have up is Dr. Walkie Charles, member of the council as well. He's actually also the director of the Alaska Native Language Center. Dr. Charles, are you on, sir?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, and the rest of the committee. Kuyana, for all the work that you do for all of Alaska. My name is Walkie Charles, professor of UPIC, and currently the director of the Alaska Native Language Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Yupiwa Imangamiwulosha. I am UPIC, and I am from originally from Imang. I want to share a bit about my connection with the current Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council and how my story reveals my compassion for the maintenance of our heart languages. 50 years ago, I was taken away to Wrangell Institute. Historically, we were the last generation who experienced the removal of children that were placed into environments where their language and culture was removed completely to learn the Western way of education. I was spared my language because even though I didn't use the language in Wrangell, my mother never went to school when school age because she cared for her dying mother who had contracted tuberculosis. And so my mother never lost her ability to speak the only language that she had. When the state of Alaska launched rural education intensive areas, along with the Molly Hooch case in 1972, and 2 years later, the establishment of the United States Bill Bilingual Education Act in 1974, I became the first UPIC instructor for the Lower Yukon School District. Since then, I have earned several degrees, and 13 years ago, my PhD in applied linguistics. Soon thereafter, the Alaska Native Language Preservation Advisory Council was born. I was the inaugural chair. Kuyana to Senator Donnie Olson and his constituents, as well as many people behind the scenes who supported the bill tirelessly. Today, I appear to address and support the formal change of the council so that everybody in the whole state, from the school children to elders, would immediately recognize who and what the Council of Alaska Native Languages is and what its purpose is. The council is a resource for all of Alaska. We want easy access for the people, and changing its name would support that. Alaska is the only state in the nation that has a recognized language council supported by the governor and the legislature. We have become the resource and reference for language policy and planning for all of Alaska. the voting members of ANLPAC are all indigenous to Alaska with decades of work in indigenous languages. What a great group to showcase to the nation how our state government supports the practices, the growth of the heart languages of the state of Alaska. I want to thank each one of you for your support and consideration for moving this bill forward. We are an objective.
Do we have any questions for Dr. Charles by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Dr. Charles. Thank you for your time and dedication to the center.
Thank you so much for all your work, Senator.
Before we go on, I'd like to point out that we've been joined by Representative Dybert here in the Senate Finance Committee. Welcome to the Senate Finance Committee. Next person up for invited testimony is Yayuk Bernadette Alvana Stimphal, Vice Chair of the Council. She's also on the Eskimo Heritage Program, the Director of Quirk Incorporated. Ms. Stimphal, go ahead and identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Yeah, and I'm Senator Olson. For the record, my name is Bernadette Yayuk Alvana Stimphal. Thank you very much for allowing me to provide a testimony as Vice Chair for ANLPAC in support for HB 26. I have been on the council since its inception. Yeah, and I look to Senator Olson for leading that cause in 2012. I will just speak to some of the areas of the bill. Council, if the name were to be changed to Council for Alaska Native Languages, what does it mean? Well, it's giving us a broader perspective on Native language realization work around the state. So in language documentation for archives, recording Native languages is a way of documenting from years past. This is where new generations can be supported to acquire and learn their respective languages. And from media, there are resources online on the internet for learners and researchers to find information to develop learning material. Indigenous people share what they have learned and what works for their communities and learning institutions, and see for community wellness. When Indigenous people learn their home language, it provides healing from their traumas of harsh treatment in schools and churches. The post-traumatic stress disorder passed down to the next generation. To break this cycle for Native people, we must work hard on cultural wellness in arts, celebrations, and ceremonies for revitalizing what was lost in all of our languages. And for restoration, we are reclaiming who we are and where we come from. We have come from thousands of years of not only surviving harsh environments, but also thriving in that very environment. Our languages come from our land, our sea, and resources in the air. And be research and renaissance. This is the time now to revive all of our languages in Alaska. The Language Council works for languages to be normalized in the whole state. This is where we hear every family speaking in the language anywhere and everywhere, which means when we have healthy communities, we are a healthy people. We're a healthy state. And revitalization, building on Native identity to move forward, is when young people learn in a language. They form an Indigenous identity. Their cultural knowledge starts to make sense. For a firm foundation, Native identity is essential. And also adding on the three Native languages that were inadvertently left out, it would reflect a respect for Alaska Native languages to become official languages in our state. We are all equal as one, and it should be included. All of our Alaska Native languages are just as important as English. As for seven voting members, Alaska needs to hear from a wider community of Alaska Native language experts and the advocates of language warriors. This makes a stronger network of language with the same perspective of revitalizing indigenous languages in our state. I would like to quote a colleague of mine, Nita Reardon, where she states, this is just one, bilingual classes have been in the school system for many years. We still don't have fluent speakers. Usually students who are introduced to our languages in the school, many language teachers are placed in the classroom only because they're speakers and know the language and culture and the environment they live in. Our language teachers need training in how to teach languages, so we need training centers. So it's vitally important. Huyanavak, thank you for letting me provide this testimony.
Here we have a question from members of the committee for Ms. Levin Stimple. Senator Hoffman, no question? Okay. Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon and being such an advocate for your program, the program up there.
Thank you, Senator.
I'd like to go ahead and open up to public testimony. First of all, in the room we have Representative Dybert. She wants to go ahead and come on for public testimony. Representative Dybert, go ahead and identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and the honorable committee members. For the record, my name is Representative Maxine Dybert, and my Khoikhon Athabascan native name is Nishtinlo, which means strong runner.
I was just going to ask you that. What does it mean? Strong runner. That's a good one. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, committee. I was not expecting to testify. So I do support House Bill 126 legislation and anything we can do to elevate the importance of Alaska Native languages is great. And just my experience. I'm Khoikhon Athabascan. My parents are James Johnson from the village of Cochrane's, Alaska, and my mom is Claire Anderson from the village of Rampart, Alaska. And I grew up in my home hearing Khoikhon language from my grandparents, talking to my parents, and but then outside of the home at schools, I spoke English. So I wish I wasn't, it was actually kind of shameful for me to learn, you know, to speak my native language. So I was encouraged to speak English. So my native language is actually like a foreign language to me. I think that this legislation could do a lot of healing for Alaska Natives, and I support it. Thank you.
Good. Any questions of Representative Dybert by members of the committee? No, thanks for coming out this afternoon.
Thank you.
Nobody else online? One online. What's the name? Princess Johnson. Are you online, ma'am?
Can you hear me?
Yes, you're coming in loud and clear. Please identify yourself for the record. Go ahead with your testimony.
Drinkwinti Shalaknai Shajita Jayoji Net Aiguch in Isli. My name is Princess Dajrai Johnson. Dajrai is my Net Aiguch in name. It means tundra swan. That was given to me by my late grandma, Captain Peter. My mom is Adeline Raboff. I just want to, first of all, Masik Chol, thank you to the co-chairs and to the honorable senators for hearing these testimonies. And I just want to thank the committee for their work and just underscore this sense of healing and reconciliation. Just looking at the most recent report, the IAROC, the 2024 action plan, when I look at the focus areas and I read the language in these focus areas, and I just want to bring to your attention focus area number 3, It says commit to language equity, and it underscores the damaging practices of colonization in Alaska that's resulted in privileging of English over Alaska Native languages, and that the state of Alaska must make a commitment to increasing the social status and prestige of Alaska Native languages through public education campaigns, increased language use in state facilities, and through partnerships that create real and lasting benefits for speakers of Alaska Native languages that are intended to undo decades of inequitable treatment. And I can't tell you how this is such a huge step in the reconciliation process and the healing process. I absolutely support the simplification of the name, the expanding of the membership, and also increasing the languages to 23. I know for myself, it has been a journey. You know, my mother was at boarding school and hit for speaking Gwich'in when she was a five-year-old child. And that is part of the reason why she didn't teach us. And so it's as an adult, you know, that I've sought out learning my own language, and that has helped me situate myself as a human being in the universe. It's helped me ground myself in our Native values and really have more compassion for the world around me, for people and for our animals and waters and land. And my children now, you know, when they see other people, you know, and they recognize a word, they get really excited. And, you know, I didn't have that as a child. And so, yeah, I just can't underscore enough how critical our languages are and how important the work of this committee is. And I just want to, just offer my gratitude for everybody that's working so hard on our languages and keeping them alive. Masicho.
Okay. Any questions by members of the committee for Ms. Johnson? If not, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. And thank you for pointing out the healing and reconciliation that goes along with preserving the language. Okay, this closes public testimony. We'll set this bill aside. I want to thank you for coming out this afternoon. I'm sorry, do we have any closing comments there, Representative Story?
Thank you, Chair Olson. Just wanted to point out that in your packet, you did get a link to the report people have been referencing, and there also is a summary that is in your. This link is just one you can go to because it was pretty, about 20 pages, but there is a summary, a two-page summary of what could be done, and the council has done it at a governor level, at a legislative level, and at the public level. So they really have tried to be hands-on in their information they're giving to us. So I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that. Thank you.
So the council is the one that put the report together?
Yes.
The summary?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for their efforts in doing that. We'll set this bill aside. So in closing, I'd like to show that this concludes our agenda for today. Tomorrow morning at 9:00, Senator Stemman will be chairing. We'll hear about the governor's supplemental budget. If there's nothing else, no other business to come before the committee, we're adjourned at 2:55 p.m.